In this series, we've been exploring what we can do when it seems like God is silent in our lives. Have we been ghosted by God? Or are there other things that we can do to hear God more clearly? In the first week, through the story of King Saul, Pastor Gabriel led us to reflect on whether we've actually been the ones selectively choosing what we want to hear and follow and neglecting God's actual instructions. We also looked at whether we had any unrenounced sins that maybe blocked God's signal. And in the second week, Wayne took us through the story of Eli and his two sons and challenged us to think, is God really the one who's silent? Or have we put our will and our needs above God's? Do we truly honor him? Do we truly seek his kingdom first? And we learned that when we are more concerned with God's agenda, his will, and his righteousness, we'll realize that the things that we truly need in life have already been met by God. And now we've come to the last week of this series, and today I'd like to share with you this story from the Old Testament. And the main character of our story today is King Ahab. Now, before I dive any further into this story, I want to share with you just a few important things to help us understand this story a little more. If you're like me, as a visual learner, visuals might help. So here's a map. The kingdom of Israel used to be one kingdom. That's when King Saul reigned, King David reigned, and King Solomon reigned. But shortly after King Solomon died, it was split into the northern and the southern kingdoms. And the north part was called Israel, and the southern part was called Judah. The north part was ruled by King Ahab, and the southern kingdom was ruled by King Jehoshaphat. At the time of this story, the two kings were friendly with one another. So one day, King Jehoshaphat comes and visits King Ahab, and they have some kingly conversations. How are the horses? How are the soldiers? How's the land? You know, the usual stuff. When suddenly, King Ahab brings up the brilliant idea. You know, let's fight Syria again and take back the city, Ramoth-Gilead, because it belongs to us. But Jay, I'll need some help. Are you down? Yeah, for sure. I'll back you up. I can provide you horses and men. Don't worry. I've got your back. Great. And so they go on chatting. But then Jehoshaphat says, wait a second. Maybe we should first ask God about his thoughts. After all, wasn't it God who told you that he'll give you Syria the last two times you fought them? Don't you just love it when you've already decided on something and then your friend kind of just slips in, wait a second, are you sure that's a good idea? Have you asked? We don't know exactly what was going on in Ahab's mind, but at the end, he gathered his trusty group of prophets together. Now, his group didn't just have 10 people. It had 400 of them. And he asked them whether or not they should go to fight Syria. And they all said, yes, go. The Lord will give it into your hands. You will win this battle. And this probably made Ahab pretty happy because that's what he wanted to hear. I don't know about you at this point, but when I was reading this passage, I found it quite interesting. 400 people and not one had a different opinion. But I guess I'm not the only one feeling a little bit skeptical because King Jehoshaphat then said, oh, wait, King Ahab, isn't there another prophet, like a prophet of the Lord that we can ask? Oh, Ahab's like, a prophet of the Lord? Don't even mention it. Yes, there is one. What was his name? Micah? Michael? Oh, all right, Micaiah. But I absolutely hate him because he never says anything good about me. In fact, he speaks evil with regards King Ahab, but maybe not this time. Give him a chance. Okay, fine. Someone, get me Micaiah. Bring him here, quick. And so the messenger went. But by this point, even the messenger in the room can read what's going on and what the king wants. And so as he brought Micaiah, he kind of gave him the nudge, nudge, wink, wink, and gave him a little bit of a heads up. Don't say I didn't warn you. The king likes what he's been hearing from the prophets. So you say the same things and say what the king wants to hear, okay? And soon Micaiah was brought to the king, and Ahab asked him the same question. Should we go fight Syria or should we hold up? Micaiah replies, yes, go. The Lord will give it into your hands. You'll win this battle. Now, logically, we might think that the king would just feel more pleased and, you know, move on, because that's what he wanted to hear, right? But here's part two of interesting. That wasn't his response. He asked Micaiah again, tell me the truth. This time, he did what Micaiah said. What King Ahab said. Micaiah told him the truth. King Ahab, you will die if you go on this battle, and your country will lose its leaders, and everyone will not return in peace. Pretty clear message, right? Going on this battle is a bad idea. But guess what? Ahab put Micaiah in prison and went to war anyways. Now here comes part three of interesting and the intriguing part. What will Ahab do now? What will happen to him? Well, first, he decided to disguise himself. He strips off his royal robes and goes to battle as a regular soldier. But then he tells King Jehoshaphat, King Jehoshaphat, you keep your robes on. And some of you are like, well, why did he do that? Because he was afraid. Part of him was afraid that what Micaiah said would come true. And so he was afraid enough to disguise himself, as well as put his ally and partner kind of on the line by being his cover. If anyone was looking for a king to kill, it wouldn't be Ahab. So it shows that he actually heard what Micaiah said, and he knew, but he really wanted to do what he wanted, and he was wishful that maybe it won't happen like what God said. So instead of listening and following, he tried to outsmart God. And so the battle goes on. And just like he had planned, people started to pursue King Jehoshaphat. And when they found out that he wasn't the king of Israel, they were about to turn back. And just when that was about to happen, this random man drew his bow at a random direction, and the arrow flew precisely at a gap in between his breastplate armor and his scale armor. And just like that, King Ahab was struck. What are the chances of such a random episode being so precise? And of course, he died in the evening from this random strike, probably from the loss of blood. A tragic story, isn't it? But a huge part of me wants to tell Ahab, King Ahab, didn't God already tell you that you'll die if you fight this battle? God told you, you didn't listen, and you died. Let's take a moment here and look back at how Ahab set himself up for this path of self-destruction. For one, Ahab heard what God said, but chose not to listen and follow. But that wasn't all. Remember from the very beginning, to Ahab, God's input didn't matter because there was something he wanted to do, and he already decided that that's what he's going to do regardless. If you remember at the very beginning of this story, he didn't even want to ask God for his input in the first place. It was only because King Jehoshaphat asked him to, and when he did, he asked a bunch of yes men. He didn't really want to hear what God had to say. What he truly wanted was God to like his plans. And when that didn't line up, he just went with what he wanted. And so he died, struck by a random arrow. As sad as it is, when I read it, I also felt like there was a little bit part of this story that was a little funny. And I didn't know that the Bible had such funny and humorous stories until I read this one. But the reason why I'm sharing this story today isn't to entertain us. It's to warn us. Because as the audience, we might feel quite removed from the story. But if we give it more thought, how many of us are actually like King Ahab? There's something we really want to do, and we've already decided from the very beginning that we'll do it regardless. We really want to relax after a long day of school or work, and so we decide to watch TV, to scroll Instagram, to do everything else except reading the Bible. We really want more money for ourselves, so we decide that, you know what, generosity isn't my thing. I like where my money's being kept right now. We really like this guy or this girl, so we decide that all the red flags that have been popping up here and there, that's okay, they can be dealt with later. Our friend reminds us, hey, you know what? Maybe you should pray about it. Maybe you should talk to a pastor about it. Maybe you should read the Bible for wisdom. And you're like, okay, fine, maybe I'll do that. I'll see what he has to say. But you know what? He never says anything good. The Bible's always so restricting. The Bible's always so limiting. So we do it, but half-heartedly, deep down, we've already decided whether or not God says something about it. It doesn't matter. Now, maybe for some of us, we're thinking, no. That's not because I've already decided. It's because the Bible didn't tell me. You know, how am I supposed to know then, like, what God really thinks about this? Really? Is that really the truth? Did God really not tell us? Sure, maybe the Bible doesn't tell us if we should park in this parking spot today, or okay, today you must call your mom because she's upset, or tell us directly that this person that I'm dating is the one that I should marry, or the person that I like is the one that I should date. But in the big principles in life, he does tell us. For example, what does God say about treating others? And I'm not talking about just the people that we love or the people that we're good friends with, but the people that we don't normally have a relationship with, like our physical neighbors or classmates or coworkers or church peers that we don't know very well. In the Bible, there's a parable, the parable of a good Samaritan. Jesus teaches us to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And remember, he says in this passage and in this parable to share a story about a Jewish man who was robbed and beaten and in need of help. But what happened at the very beginning was two people, a priest and a Levite, people who were supposed to be kind and prestigious and respected, they both passed by the other side and just left this person be. And Jesus then teaches us that loving our neighbors as ourselves should be like that Samaritan, the most unthinkable person because of how culturally and socially different they are, but still willing to show compassion and kindness, go above and beyond to care and help for the person in need. What about us? Do we try to act like the Samaritan in our daily lives, or more like the priest and the Levite? When we see a new classmate lost, wandering in the halls, trying to find a spot, or just trying to find a person to eat with, what do we do? Do we see them and acknowledge them, but then pass by the other side because we decide that it's more important that I eat with my friends today? Or when a coworker is in need to swap shifts with you because of their family needs, do you decide that actually my time is also very valuable? I want my day off. I don't want to swap shifts with you. I don't want to take on another shift. Someone else will help her or him. Or when a church peer, someone that you know, someone who's in your small group, you see them sitting on the side, they look a little bit upset today, and you kind of have the heart to go and see and check in on them, but you feel like it might be awkward, might be uncomfortable. Oh, you know what? Pastor Fizz will care about that person. That's not my job. Oh, Angela will definitely go and care for that person. I don't have to worry about them. What is our response? Have we decided already what it looks like to show love to our neighbors according to our preferences and ways? Or do we truly try to act on what God says? Here's another example. In Colossians chapter 3, it says, "Obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by the way of eye service, as in only when people are watching us, or as people pleasers, or when people praise you or applaud you or validate us, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men." Here, it reminds us that when we work or when we study, first off, we should always be aiming for a job well done. Not just because people see us working or studying. And don't just do a good job when your teachers, your parents, your boss praise you, or you know that from this you'll get some kind of benefit. Instead, do it as if God is our boss and He's the one that we need to please. Think about this. If God is the one giving you a mark on your assignments and your papers, what kind of work do you think you would hand in? Would you only put in 30% and 40% because scrolling or procrastinating took the best of you, or you feel like that assignment isn't important? Or would you put in your best initial efforts regardless of what you might get afterwards? If God is your actual boss, would you only do the things that you want to do as the employee and not the things that He wants us to do? Would you over-prioritize work and constantly work overtime because you want to please your employer or because you know that you'll get a promotion or get recognized from this? Or do you keep His commandment to keep Sabbath, prioritize your relationship with Him too? Do we try to listen to God and please Him with all that we do? Or have we already decided in our hearts that He's not the most important? What about offering? In 2 Corinthians 9, it says, "Each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver, and God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you may abound in every good work." God doesn't tell us that He likes a certain amount as offering, that 157.28 is the perfect amount to give. Nor does He tell us that this is what we should do. Okay, sit in front of the computer, open up your spreadsheet, take a look at your finances, and now deduct your rent, deduct your food costs, deduct your pet fees, deduct your bubble tea fees, deduct your snack fees, and then give your offering. But He does give us a big principle. Give generously, give happily, because He Himself is a generous God and He loves a cheerful giver. He also tells us and promises us that He is the one who is able to bless us with all sufficiency, and so we can trust Him. But again, do we give offering like God tells us, or have we already decided? When we are reminded to faithfully set an amount for offering, have we already decided that we will withhold our giving because we feel like we don't have enough money right now? I can't do that. I can't give this amount. I can't give offering at all. I'm insufficient. Or have we decided that I have something I really want to buy? I have wants. Or have we decided that we won't give because the security that we feel when there's more money in the bank is more important? Have we decided what offering looks like regardless of what God says? Brothers and sisters, on the things that truly matter in our lives, God has already given us many, many principles to help us navigate. And so the question comes back to us. Did God really not say? Is God really the one who's silent? Did God ghost us? And the truth is, God didn't ghost us. Maybe it's us who kind of put Him on do not disturb, because we don't want Him interrupting the plans that we've already decided on. Or maybe we have already decided in our hearts that no matter what He says, we won't do it. that God's voice doesn't matter. In the Bible, Jesus describes the people who hear and don't do the word of God as fools. Now, I promise you, I did not make this up. You can look at the slide. And in this parable, Jesus tells us that the fool is not the person who openly rejects God's word. The fool is not the person who simply didn't listen. The fool is the person who hears but decides to do it their own way and does not do what God tells them. Like the foolish man in this parable, he wanted convenient and immediate results, so he built his house on sand. He said, "It's too much work to dig deep and find bedrock as the foundation for my house. It'll take too much time. I'll just go with the easier option." He's already decided. And on the surface, it might look fine, just like any other house. But the true test came when the rain fell, the floods came, and the wind blew. That house was completely destroyed. On the other hand, the wise man took longer, probably worked harder, you know, gave it more sweat and the hours to build the house on rock. But when the same kinds of rain, floods, and winds came, it was sturdy. It withheld those tests. This can be our lives too. But many of us have the story flipped. We think following God's ways is limiting. No sex before marriage? How can I know if this person is the one that will give me satisfaction? We think following God's way is foolish or stupid. Be generous. Do you know how expensive it is to live in Vancouver nowadays? We think listening to God will destroy us. What do you mean go out of your way to help someone that I don't know very well? What if I get hurt? What if it costs me? And the unfortunate part is just like King Ahab, is that we've already decided that that's the truth. That God actually wants more bad than good. That regardless of all the good things that he's given, that he's shown, and that he's promised, we don't want his input, we don't want to hear his voice, and we dismiss him altogether, even the warnings. Brothers and sisters, is that really how we want to live? Do we really want to be a group of people who continually builds our life on an unsteady foundation? What if for once that we try believing that his ways are actually wise? Believe that he knows where we're going, and where we're going is setting up ourselves for destruction. What if for once we just try trusting? Trusting that this God, the creator of heaven and earth, can see more than we can. Trusting that God's heart for us is actually good. Trusting that his ways are better than ours. Can you imagine King Ahab's ending? If he would have just softened his heart, he turned back, and to receive what God had to say? Would he have had to feel the fear and the anxiety as he stepped onto the battlefield? Would he have had to feel the sweat, the blood, and the pain? Would he have lost his life? No, he could have lived. He could have lived in a kingdom protected by someone who's greater than him. What about us? Can you imagine if we would just stop fighting God's voice today? Imagine the relief that you would feel of having someone carry that weight for you. Imagine the lightness on your shoulders when you don't have to feel the crushing weight of needing to decide every single thing to lay out your future. Because you've already decided to let a king, the King of all kings, to help build your foundation for you and with you. In the Bible, Jesus ends his Sermon on the Mount with this parable, emphasizing the importance of acting on his word. And today, I would like to end the sermon by inviting you to reflect. I'm going to invite all of us to stand together as we reflect. Is there anything in your life where you've already decided? You know that your will is not the same as God's. And you've decided that God's input doesn't matter. Perhaps it's about a relationship that you're in or you want to begin. You know that there are things that you should be more cautious about before dating someone. You know that you shouldn't move in before marriage. You know that you shouldn't cross any more physical boundaries. But you've decided to go ahead anyways because you really like this person. Or perhaps it's about money. You know that God has already blessed you with everything, but it's still hard to let go of a sense of insecurity and comfort. So you've decided that you won't give. You know that God delights in a cheerful giver, but you struggle and to trust that he's able to sustain and provide for you. So you've decided that I'll need more time, God. Or perhaps it's about work. You know that you've put work above God, worrying about what your boss thinks of you, and you've constantly put God aside because you're working hard to please your company or supervisor. You know that you should please God, but you've decided that immediate recognition and what others think of you is more important. What if God is reminding you and telling you today that you are building your house on sand? And he's inviting you to turn back. Would you be willing to rebuild a sturdy foundation with God? Before you go any further and deeper, would you turn back? Turn back from your decision and lay it down. Surrender. Surrender your will to him. Would you trust that God's will and plan for you is good? Would you do something different with God? I'll give us about a minute to think about it and for you to pray to God.